The Book Nook on WYSO is made possible by five local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. I'd like to welcome to the program today, Robin Yoakum. Hello, Robin.
Hi, Vic. How's it going?
Very well, Robin.
Thanks for having me back on. I appreciate it.
That's right. We had you on for your last book, and I've been looking forward to this new one. It's called A Welcome Murder. And you set your novels in Eastern Ohio, which is your kind of old stomping grounds, isn't it?
It is my old stomping grounds. I grew up in the village of Brilliant, Ohio, and which is about 7 miles south of Steubenville, right on the Ohio River. So I've set books over there, you know, in part because, one, you write what you know, but also I just feel very comfortable writing in that sort of what I call the grit and the grind, that blue collar with a blue collar industrial backdrop for the stories. Just it seems to work for me.
And this new one, A Welcome Murder, is set mostly in Steubenville. Set the stage. Tell us what is happening here as we enter the story.
As you enter the story, basically we've got, even though it's narrated by five different people, I think, Johnny Earle is the central character of the book. And Johnny was a tremendous high school athlete who thought he was going to play Major League Baseball. And after he washed out of the majors, he started dealing cocaine and ends up in prison. And the book really starts to unfold 7 years later as Johnny is getting out of the federal penitentiary. And all he wants to do is go back to Steubenville, go get the drug money that he hid before he went to prison, and go somewhere where nobody has ever heard of Johnny Earle and try to start his life over. And that's how things pick up. And then I think it's safe to say the book revolves around all the forces that end up keeping Johnny Earle in Steubenville, Ohio.
Would it be apt to describe Johnny as a real screw-up?
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. And in I like Johnny's transformation from this cocky high school, this athlete. And as he says in the book, 7 years in prison will knock the cockiness right out of you. And to the point where he has totally screwed up his life. And he at least he recognizes that. Doesn't blame it on anyone else. He knows he's screwed up. And I think there's a little bit of a transformation taking place there. But certainly, he is. As he said, you couldn't convince him that he wasn't going to play in the major leagues, and he had that arrogant swagger to him, and ends up, everything he thought that he was going to get accomplished, nothing happened. He ended up in prison.
Your second narrator is the county sheriff, and he has grand ambitions, but he's kind of a screw up too, isn't he?
To a degree. He has trouble keeping his pants on for a while.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And he was a very successful FBI agent in Minnesota who returns to Steubenville to become sheriff. And he was very well respected in the FBI, and he gets down in the valley and kind of gets sucked into maybe some of the trappings of the office, I would think. But he does have ambitions. He ultimately would like to be president of the United States, and which, as the book unfolds, seems a total impossibility. But that's, that's his ambition. He likes to talk about it. And then pretty soon, you see things start. When things look the darkest, they start perking up for him a little bit toward the end of the book. But Vic, with my characters, I try really hard. You don't often do it, but, you know, I try to make sure that my characters live a lot in that gray area in the middle of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think so there is so little, we live so little of our lives in black and white. You know, we're always drifting into that gray area where we may tend to have high morals or we think we do, but then temptation gets the best of us and we make a bad decision. And I think that happens with every human being alive. And I try to show the warts of my characters too. And that's with Sheriff Roberson. You know, I'm trying to be as honest with my readers as possible so they see the warts and all.
Your third narrator is Allison, and she's married to the sheriff.
She is married to the sheriff.
Tell us about her.
Sure. Well, Allison was the grew up in a Baltimore suburb, the daughter of a government bureaucrat, and she meets Frances when she's working at the at Quantico at the FBI Academy, and she loved her life in Minnesota. And she loved, you know, that he had this great job, and with the FBI, everything was beautiful. And when the sheriff drags her back to Steubenville, she's miserable. She's absolutely miserable, and all her goal is simply to get out of Steubenville in whatever way she can. And part of that is she is promoting her husband. The job he does as sheriff, and in hopes of getting him elected to Congress so that she can, and maybe ultimately to the governor's office, but just for starters, getting out of Steubenville. And that is her primary mission. Now, she's also quite aware that the sheriff has been having an affair, and partially, one of the things I really liked about the book or one of the scenes that was certainly fun to write was after she finds out he's having the affair and she confronts him, she's delighted with it because she knows now that's going to give her a lot of leverage to ultimately get the two of them out of Steubenville.
So it plays into her plans. Your fourth narrator is my favorite character, and that is Matthew Vincent Smoochie Xenakis. Tell us how he got the name Smoochie.
Well, the very first line is in Smoochie's chapter is, I have disproportionately large lips. Smoochie was the guy who in high school, everybody picked on, who really probably tried too hard to make friends and was just never very popular. And, you know, he was just that guy. That guy. And Smoochie ends up married to Dina Marie, who was Johnny Earl's sweetheart, in high school. So basically, the homecoming queen ends up married to the class dweeb, and now she's miserable. But Smoochie, all he wants to do is make the marriage work. He's a social worker. He's a hard worker. He's a really a good, good-hearted guy who has just been walked on his entire life. So as the book unfolds, you also find out Dina Marie has been having an affair with the sheriff. She was having an affair with the corpse in the book. And Smoochie had confronted the guy she was having the affair with. He gets roughed up a bit. So when the corpse is found, he's naturally a suspect in the murder. And this slow transformation starts to take place because it gets in the newspaper that he's being questioned in connection with this murder. And he notices, and his brother is also around showing him this, how people are suddenly treating him different. And they're a little bit afraid of him now. And it's the first time in his life he's ever experienced sort of this kind of respect, I guess. It's fear, but all of a sudden people are taking note of him, and he likes it, and he begins this transformation from you know, smoochy Xenakis, who everyone's picking on, to he starts making everybody call him Vincent. He takes on this sort of mafioso type of character throughout the book, and I just love the transformation he makes.
You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world. It's a book nook, and you've already alluded to your fifth narrator, full name Dina Marie Konchek Androsky Xenakis. Everybody apparently is in love with her, and I do need to clarify, you mentioned earlier that she was having an affair with the corpse, who's a fellow named Race Dobner. I'd like to indicate that there's no necrophilia involved
no,
here.
No necrophilia whatsoever. It was all
he,
was...
he becomes a corpse later.
Later on.
After the fact. Is he the welcome murder then of the title?
He is the welcome murder.
Okay.
He is the welcome murder, yes. Because even though Race is gone, dead, as everyone said, nobody's upset about it. You know,
Dina Marie is.
Dina Marie a little bit. She had broken it off at that point.
Okay.
So even though, you know, Dina Marie sees it as a great opportunity. See, because about the time they find Race's body, Johnny Earl has come out of prison. Now she's carried a torch for Johnny Earl for all these years. And she thinks, well, Johnny's out of prison now. If I can just get rid of my husband, Smoochie, well, then that would set it up perfect. I'd be available for Johnny. So she, being the manipulative little devil she is, she goes down to talk to the sheriff, who she'd been having an affair with, and tries to convince him that her husband, Smoochie, is the killer. Because if she can get him put in prison, well, then things open up a little bit. Now, the sheriff and most people say, you know, Smoochie Xenakis wouldn't kill a bug. Do you really expect us to believe that he shot a man, killed Ray Stobner? But that doesn't stop her. She continues to try to manipulate the system there.
What is it about Dina Marie that every guy in town is in love with her? Every guy in town wants her. What's the deal with her?
You know, Vic, I think guys are very simple creatures. And, you know, Dina Marie is pretty easy on the eyes. And she uses whatever tools she has in her arsenal to attract guys to try to get what she wants. And I don't know if it's the old homecoming queen or what the attraction was there, but as the sheriff says, he had been in love with her since the second grade. And I think that was part of it. With Race, I don't think Race was all that particular, you know, I mean, and she was available, so. But, there is a certain allure about her, even when you know it is not going to end well. Like the sheriff. He knew she had run her mouth. He knew it would get out. He knew all that, and yet he couldn't not meet her at the hotel.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The book is A Welcome Murder. Robin Yoakum wrote it. Robin, you've already revealed more about the storyline than I expected, so I'm wondering, can we talk about Johnny's cellmate at all?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, I think that's obviously central to the story.
He's not a narrator, but he's a big, looming presence.
He is. He is. And his name is Ulrich Himmler, which probably isn't his real name, but that's what he goes by. And he ends up being Johnny's cellmate at the federal penitentiary. And he is a white supremacist. And he recruits Johnny into his army and because he's creating the Republic of New Germania. It's a country that's going to be, it's out there somewhere. Even Himmler, he's not quite sure. It's out west somewhere. It's going to be in Montana or Idaho or Utah. We're going to go out there and start this, the Republic of New Germania. And so he recruits Johnny into his army while he's in the prison. Now, Johnny wants nothing to do with this, but this guy is such a beast, he doesn't dare. He doesn't dare cross him, so he just goes along with it. Well, what happens is that Johnny ends up telling the chaplain, the prison chaplain, about the money he had hid that he's going to go back and get. And the prison chaplain happens to be in bed with, he's a white supremacist also, who's teamed up with Himmler. So now Himmler, his cellmate, knows Johnny's got $450,000 tucked away, and he wants access to that money to help start his new country. So when he shows up unexpectedly in Steubenville, while Johnny's being held in jail on suspicion of murder, it really adds to the chaos.
I'll say, my guess is Robin Yoakum, the book is A Welcome Murder. I've read your other books, Robin, and I've got to say, you really let your hair down in this one. This is very different for you. It's almost a radical departure, I think, for you. It's wild. It's completely wild.
You're absolutely right. It's much different than any of my other books, when I'm talking to people and they'll say, what's the difference? I always say in most of my books, at least one person's trying to do the right thing. In this one, nobody's trying to do the right thing. Everyone is just out for themselves. And you're right. I just kind of, when I started talking about Johnny Earl and he is, I just kind of let him go. And I tried to expose, like I said, warts and all, and just let my characters run without inhibition. And, it's kind of funny when people ask, well, how'd you think come up with this and how'd you come up with that? And usually I don't have a good answer for them other than, it was just my imagination. And when a story starts coming together, the voices in my head will not stop talking. Mm. And that's what happened in this. I said many times, I felt like I wasn't, it felt more like I was taking dictation than I was writing.
Mm.
Because they were just, the book is very dialogue driven. And it was almost like I just sat back and listened to them go.
What a wonderful thing to be in the flow like that.
It is. It is. I know athletes talk about being in the zone. And when I was working on this one, it was very easy in that, like I said, I just sat back and let them roll. And there were times, I went back and tweaked some things and added some things here and there. But for the most part, it was good just to let them have fun.
The last time we had you on the show was for your previous book, A Brilliant Death. And I understand that recently you've received some fairly impressive recognition for this. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah. The Brilliant Death was shortlisted for an Edgar Award for Best Original Paperback. And I'll be in New York next weekend. Next Thursday, the 27th, for the annual banquet. And we'll find out how if it won or not. It's up against six other authors' books, or I'm sorry, five others. There's six total. Three of us are all from Seventh Street Books. Adrian McKinty for Rain Dogs, and Jim Ziskin. And I've forgotten the name. That's terrible. I've forgotten the title of Jim's book right now.
That's okay. We had Adrian on for Rain Dogs. You guys are a vying for that particular Edgar for, is it Best Original Paperback?
Yes.
And the Edgars are named after Edgar Allan Poe, and they're presented by the Mystery Writers of America. And when you're an Edgar winner, a recipient, or even a nominee, that's a big deal.
I am pretty tickled, Vic, and I'll tell you, it caught me totally off guard. I was actually up here in Columbus having a meeting with a client. I still do some. I've got a PR marketing consulting business, and I walked out after the meeting into the parking lot to check my emails, and the internet was blowing up, and that's how I found out. So, Yeah, I'm you know, it's a privilege. It's a privilege, and I'm very excited about it. And you know, if I win, great. If I don't, well, we'll try again sometime.
Well, for mystery writers, the Edgars are the equivalent of, say, the Oscars for movie actors.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely. Yep.
When you, I suppose you haven't gone to the award ceremony before if you haven't been nominated, but I'm guessing you probably like have to have a speech prepared or something.
Yeah, it's a black tie affair. Okay. And I'll make sure, you know, I haven't really prepared anything, but I'll make sure that I thank all the right people. And, you know, I've got a really, I mean, Seventh Street Books does such a great job, promoting and with the production of the books. And, my agent, is, Colleen Mohide in Boston. And I'll tell you, I would take a bullet for Colleen. She's been a gem. And that includes the days when, you know, she could take her portion of the royalty checks and maybe she could go get a cup of coffee. Yeah. If she had wanted a scone, it was coming out of her pocket because there wasn't enough for both.
Uh-huh.
And she's really stuck with me. And my wife, Melissa, is so supportive. So, you know, it everything has to come together in the right way for things to work out. And yeah, it is. I'll tell you the one thing that's different with the Academy Awards. You know, the Academy Awards, they come out and announce their nominees.
Uh-huh.
And I think like 3 weeks later or a month at the most, they have their banquet or, you know, the Academy Awards. With the mystery writers, they announce it in early January, and they don't give out the awards till late April. So you've got like 4 months of wondering if you're going to make the cut or not.
We actually have had six authors on the program in the last year who are nominated for Edgars this year. So we're pretty happy about that here at the Book Nook.
Well, you know, it's an honor to be on. I appreciate, you know, you've given me great support over the years, and I appreciate that.
You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. We're talking to Robin Yoakum about A Welcome Murder. And with the cycle of publishing this book, I when we had you on the show before, you talked about how you were thinking about these other books and you had titles for them and your publisher said, no, I don't like that title. You had a theme. I'm trying to remember. Was it Decks of Cards?
Or It was the Baron, the Duke,
that's
and
it.
The Earl.
That's it. I remember now.
And the Baron became A Brilliant Death and the Earl became A Welcome Murder. Now, I've already signed a book deal for next year. There'll be one coming out about next April, which is The Duke of Mingo Junction, which I got to tell you is my favorite title of any of the book, any that I've ever come up with. And they've already told me, don't get too attached to it.
Okay.
They're going to stay with that, A Brilliant Death, A Welcome Murder. It'll be a something.
I see.
I got to tell you, Vic, I'm not very good at it, apparently, because they said this Earl of the Ville, which I didn't particularly like anyway, we got to come up with something. And I'll bet I sent my editor 125 different titles. And they didn't like anything. And I finally told him, I said, you know what, call it Robin's Next Book because I'm out. I can't, you know, I can't come up with another, nothing I'm coming up with works for you. So I think A Welcome Murder was one, or A Most Welcome Murder, as I think was one of my suggestions, and they took that and kind of tweaked it around. But it all ends up to the marketing department with the title and the cover. You know, they hope you like it,
uh-huh.
But if you don't, too bad for you. Here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to do with it. So,
well, they are the publisher. They know better.
Exactly. Exactly.
Is The Duke of Mingo Junction still being written?
No, it's my editor has it. And I should be getting it back sometime early summer for edits. And I've started on another one that I would hope will be ready to hand in about this time next year.
Another one with the same thematic approach or something completely different?
This one is set in a small town, and it involves the disappearance of a 12-year-old boy.
And what is the Duke book about?
The Duke is about a guy who is 20 years past. He made the game-winning shot in a state championship basketball game. And we pick up his life 20 years later, and he really has accomplished nothing in life beyond what he accomplished on the basketball court. And he's trying to, what he wants to do is open up a restaurant, Duke's Place, where he can capitalize on his popularity, but still try to accomplish something else in his life beyond what he did, as he says, when I was shaving twice a week. And there is a mafia component here where his brother-in-law is a mafia enforcer who's trying to get control of the restaurant. And there's a couple people end up getting killed along the way that kind of adds to the intrigue there. And what hinges on the line is if he moves out of town and cooperates with the FBI in an investigation, then he'll lose his identity as the Duke of Mingo Junction.
Well, before I cue up my 45 of the Duke of Earl, I need to observe that there seems to be a thematic thread here. Did you go to high school with some very big jocks who then went on to become personal failures?
Well, you know, one of the things when I was growing up is, and I was very fortunate, is my dad, who was a steel worker, preached to me from the time I was a kid, college. He said, you don't want to be one of these guys, graduates high school and ends up back, you know, at the high, wearing his high school varsity jacket, you know, at the games 10 years later and trying to capture those glory days. Mm. And that really resonated with me. Dad, he scheduled, had me take a tour of Weirton Steel in Weirton, West Virginia, when I was a junior in high school. And I think he did it to make sure I understood either keep the grades up and get in college or here's what you're going to end up doing for the rest of your life. But I also saw a lot of guys with and I was a ball player. I played football and baseball and basketball in high school. A lot of guys I played with who had tremendous talent who never did a darn thing after high school. And it always seemed like such a shame. They had the drive and the talent to excel on the athletic field, but they could never transfer that beyond those days, those glory days. Bruce Springsteen song, you know, living in the past. So yeah, there's a little bit of a theme in this. In fact, all three characters in A Brilliant Death, Mitch, he narrates A Brilliant Death. He and Johnny Earl and the Duke in the next one, they're all three cousins.
Mm-hmm.
So they all have a sort of similar history. And, you know, athletics down in the High River Valley, that was a ticket out. That's how you got out of, if you wanted to get out and there wasn't a lot of money, which there wasn't, you know, sports, if you could get an athletic scholarship, you can get your education paid for. So,
yeah. Well, it's the age old quandary, Robin. Is there life after high school? We really appreciate your time today.
Oh gosh. It's my pleasure. Anytime.
You've been listening to the Book Nook. My guest has been Robin Yocum. His novel is A Welcome Murder, and good luck at the Edgars.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye.